Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Classic chocolate cake with a layer of jam in the middle.
What the hell are you talking about?
It's Thursday, which means it's time for the Front 3 Q&A podcast with me, Adam Bolt, with the one and only Statman Rave.
It's actually a copyrighted idea, Adam.
Chris Penage.
Appendage? Mm-hmm.
Chris Appendage, yeah.
Yes.
And Lawrence
McKenna. What a comedy name.
Oh, we got there. We got there in the end. Guys.
And Adam Boltwood.
Boltwood. There is actually a Twitter account out there. Adam Boltwood.
I'm pretty sure they deleted it when they found out there was no value in the account.
Yeah, there's no followers coming to that one. Poorly conceived from the start. Guys, welcome to the Front 3 Q&A podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for joining us. We are going to be answering your questions, as always, in part two. Before that, though, we have to talk the midweek action and some of the news in the world of football. But before even that, it's comment of the week time, guys. Have you got a jingle for Hole of the Week, Lawrence?
Hole of the Week!
That's not from Copper 90.
Have a good,
ladies and gentlemen. Love
have
it.
A spice.
Now, sad news. I can't actually access the podcast reviews at the moment. The service that I was using to access the reviews from around the world has broken. So the hold of the week this week is going to be a Twitter comment from Nathan at TT Tactics. He said, been listening to the Front 3 since at Flav Bateman was on as a guest. The latest episode is very good, especially the intro on BBC pundits and Liverpool. Nathan, thank you for your kind words. Thank you for listening. I'm glad that you've now joined us. Are we almost 2 years into this now? 2 years, guys.
Wow.
If you've been here from the start, good on you.
I love you.
Let's
shout out to my day ones.
Shout out to the day oneers. Yeah, you can go back. There's a lot of episodes to listen to, Nathan. I mean, feel free to go all the way back. You know, hindsight's a beautiful thing.
Also, valuable advertising to us now.
Very true. Let's talk the midweek action then, guys. First up, Manchester City hammering West Ham United 4-0. Obviously, one man was the star of the show, has to be said. We've probably all heard enough Jesus puns already, so I won't resurrect them here. But Dave, he has been something of a godsend, if you will, for Manchester City. Held by some as a saviour for Pep Guardiola. His performance last night was heavenly in many ways. You know, he showed pace, he showed power. He nailed that cross for Kevin De Bruyne, of course, as well as getting himself on the score sheet. Of course, we shouldn't expect miracles, Dave, but is this kid the real deal?
I think he's starting to become the real deal at Manchester City under Pep Guardiola. Wow. I think he plays a very, very nice role in this side. Something that Aguero, quite frankly, can't really do in a way. Gabriel Jesus can play as a false nine. Aguero isn't really a false nine. And that's why Jesus has looked so good in this side, because this side is sort of geared to having a player that's dropping a little bit deeper into midfield and allowing players to run past him, a la Silva, a la De Bruyne. But I don't think Jesus demands all the credit, because the two other young players that flank him, Sterling and Sane, have been brilliant in the last two games. Both of them have been fantastic. And I like how they all come together. They just look so good. It works.
Are you saying that Aguero is not the Messiah?
Oh, I am, Lawrence.
We're all getting out our inner tabloid hack here right now. Yes. That Front 3, great podcast, Dave. You're right.
a young, promising lineup. Jesus, as you said, I believe he is he 20 now? 19, maybe? Leroy Sané is 21. And, of course, Raheem Sterling is 23. So a lot of potential for a number of years, Chris. As Dave's saying there, obviously Aguero started on the bench. He did make a cameo, but Jesus doing certain things Aguero can't. A lot of people saying this is the beginning of the end for Aguero, Chris.
It's a difficult one. I mean, he's 28. He's had a massive influence on the club. I think Dave makes a valid point about the false nine element. You know, the fact he can assist. He put on a beautiful pass last night, I think for Sané, maybe Silva, that was in behind the fullback. It is. It's that idea that a club of City size or with their ambitions can't stand still. They have to keep growing, keep evolving. And it's difficult when you have such an attachment and it's someone that's been so central to the new era of City as Aguero. I think long term, you may see him slowly phased out, though.
Well, yeah, but...
I think it's that transition.
I just think you can have options. And just because a more senior striker or someone is perceived to be a more senior striker sitting on the bench... And then comes on as a substitute, and then it's set, and then there's direct quotes from Pep Guardiola saying, "I think they can probably play together."
Yeah, of course he's going to say that. Do you know what I mean? I think we've seen this season that there are certain things Aguero doesn't do that Guardiola wants his attackers to be able to accomplish.
He has 11 goals this year,
of course. But I mean, Jesus, Jesus himself has been involved in 3 goals in his first 3 games. You know. Stats.
All right, crucify me. What do you want?
The question, though, is, Lawrence, regardless of whether this is the beginning of the end for Aguero, regardless of whether they can play together, are Man City still in this title race? Asks Mike. Now they have company and Jesus. Seems a talent to behold. Will they catch Chelsea? And can they overtake Liverpool? What do you reckon, Lawrence?
As long as you've got Jesus, you've always got company. I think they're both on the same number of games, same number of points. I mean, you'd say that any of the teams who are immediately ahead of Man City are catchable because they're only 1 point ahead, but they're 10 points behind Chelsea. I mean, you'd say that 10 points is an insurmountable lead, even at this point in the season, right?
I wouldn't say insurmountable, but it's becoming that way. I think, you know...
It's looking tricky because, obviously, yeah. Chelsea play Arsenal next. The likelihood is that, you know...
You never know of Arsenal.
I'd outweigh one side's pegging the other back. And then Chelsea have what you perceive as quite a simple run of games all the way until, I'd say, April 5th against Man City. Then they play United, Everton in April, and then they finish the season on a relatively simple run, while all other sides, from what I can see, have got a much harder run than Chelsea have got at this point in the season.
It is getting tight up there, very tight, especially between second place and fifth, as you say. Spurs on 47, Arsenal on 47, Liverpool and Man City on 46. One team who are falling a little bit behind, though, Dave. 4 points adrift of Man City in sixth are Manchester United. Not a great result for them last night. A 0-0 draw at home to Hull.
Millers.
Dave. I mean, they're on an unbeaten run, but they have the least wins in the top six, the most draws in the top six, the lowest goal difference in the top six, and the least goals scored in the top six. That lack of a clinical edge in front of goal is hurting them, isn't it, Dave?
Excuse me, Adam. We're actually champions of the division of the draw league of the Premier League. We have the most draws in the Premier League of any club, and not just the top six, of everybody. We are champions. But it was another poor performance for Manchester United, another performance that lacked clinical finishing, that lacked elite finishing, that really was their own fault for the loss. They created two massive chances. The one Mata chance that he missed from about 3 yards, and Paul Pogba one-on-one again, not just putting it too close to the goalkeeper, not putting it into the corners. Very, very poor from both Pogba and Mata in front of goal. Zlatan was poor. I don't think anyone played that well. Good. Apart from Ander Herrera. Ander Herrera was the only guy that, again, looks like he gives a shit about United at the moment. It just seems to be that when these games come around, and it's just frustrating. It seems that Ander Herrera is the only guy that's tracking back, winning the ball back, playing it forward, receiving it again, playing across into the box. Then the ball trying. Then, you know, it's one of those things. He's the only one that looks busy in these games. Mkhitaryan was absolute garbage. Why Martial wasn't even on the bench, I don't even. Well, why he wasn't brought on, sorry, I don't even know.
And it was frustrating. There's something weird going on there, is there? Because he obviously started or featured in midweek. As we said, a poor first half, but much improved in the second half, provided assists, key assists. Why is he not featuring in this sort of game?
I don't know. You know, I would have brought him on 100%. I think the substitution to bring on Wayne Rooney for Carrick at half-time made sense, switched the system up. Mata for Mkhitaryan made sense. And unfortunately, the last substitution was used before to bring on Jones. So maybe you've got to look at that, leaving Mkhitaryan on, even though he had a really poor game, and trying to bring on Mata for Rashford, who was good and bad. You know, it was frustrating, didn't really tie his fullback up. It was just a really frustrating night for Manchester United because they just didn't play anywhere near where they could do. And again, poor, poor finishing.
And Hull also poor finishing though, didn't they, Dave?
Yeah, it's a fair point. Abel Hernandez lofted over clean through on goal, absolutely choked Markovic hitting the post. I think what you've got to give credit to is Marco Silva. You know, he's played United three times in the last month, one draw, one win, one defeat. I think that's a very good record against Mourinho, and they're starting to look like a decent team. But Nias should have been sent off. You know, three challenges that were shocking, that all deserved the yellow card, but unfortunately the referee only booked him once. So again, it's sort of this whole referees aren't giving United any favours, but United don't deserve the favours at the moment.
Dave, why is Mourinho such a fucking voyeur?
I love that he gets in your skin, Lawrence. It's brilliant.
He's down under it.
Yeah, all around it.
Not sure he's under my skin, Dave. I was just wondering why he's so obsessed with other people's managers and not...
Yeah, you see, he's already got to you, Lawrence. He's already in your head, and he's already in all those Liverpool players' head, and he's in Jurgen Klopp's head, even though they're not even playing Manchester United. And as someone that's challenging us for that last Champions League spot, along with Manchester City, it's brilliant.
So you're saying that you're just drinking the Kool-Aid?
Lawrence, we're coming sixth, and we're going to win the Europa League, the FA Cup, and the League Cup. And it's going to be fine, okay?
Right.
You can take the fourth position.
But sorry, so are you saying you're for a red, white and blue Brexit?
Exactly, Lawrence.
Lawrence, you've obviously got some thoughts on this. I mean, what do you make of it? Because we've got a question here from Gibbs, at Ryan Gibson 995, who says, does Klopp get treated differently by officials in comparison to other top-level managers? This springs from, in case you missed it, Mourinho mentioning post-game last night that he feels like he gets treated differently to other managers. This seems to be his perception, he said in a post-game interview. Of course, we had Jurgen Klopp come out the night before to talk about how a fourth official said he loved his passion on the sidelines. Passion is one word for it, I guess. What do you make of this, Lawrence? Is this just more silliness from Jose Mourinho?
I don't really know where we buy into it. But at some
are
point
we just falling for the it. Trap we're talking about it? This is what he wants us to talk about. He doesn't want us to talk about poor performance, the lack of wins.
Well, the fact is we can cover both. I mean, it shows that Mourinho is under pressure to some extent. I think it shows that he doesn't have answers at the moment for questions like that. I think it shows to something. I mean, there are big wide theories that legally we are not allowed to talk about on this podcast, which is why it irks me a little bit, because I am actually on Jose Mourinho's side when it comes down to this. But on a wider scale, and I think in time we'll see Jose Mourinho vindicated in what he's doing right now. And I think there's a reason he's barbing at Klopp, and I think there's a reason why he gets at certain other managers. And I think that'll become clear when all those managers have retired, or in years to come, we'll find out why. But I also think it's sort of... I'm saying he's right, but I think he's going about it wrong. It's just a theory. But I think Mourinho's right. I think Mourinho should just... He needs to take the higher moral ground where he thought he sat before and where he alluded to sitting. And he doesn't seem to sit there anymore.
I think his reputation precedes him in many ways, but I think he's right to the extent that what is sometimes construed as Jurgen Klopp's passion that everyone loves to see on the touchline, it's actually it's approaching the line, you know.
I also think if that was the referee, then we'd have seen a very different situation. I also think Mourinho wants to be the exception to the rule rather than part of the rule, and he can no longer be the exception to the rule because he was an exception to the rule for such a long time. And the bigger problem for Mourinho now is you can't stab people in the eye, you can't get at people, you can't undermine referees, that you can't do all these things and then expect to remain above the law. And I think what he's trying to do is divert from his own mistakes, and he's trying to bring other people down to whatever level it is that he thinks he's on.
Do you think there is a diversion from Mourinho's mistakes, Dave? I mean, people are talking about how United fans need to get real. You know, this is the real level Manchester United are at. Ross Heyburn saying Manchester United potentially out the top four. But since when did the season end in February? Everyone's proclaiming their European qualification chances over.
As I mentioned on the game of two halves that Lawrence very well refereed, Man United have the best squad in the Premier League, not in terms of the quality, in terms of the depth. And they're the only team that are left in four competitions in the Premier League. So they've still got things to play for. And honestly, I think that they're going to finish sixth.
Being in the Premier League doesn't mean you're still in a competition. It just means you're in there by doing.
Lawrence, can Manchester United mathematically win the Premier League?
Yes, Dave, but you and I both know.
Can Chelsea mathematically get relegated?
David O'Brien, the Sean Spicer of the front three.
David O'Brien, if Manchester United do indeed finish sixth, as you're predicting, what does that mean for Jose Mourinho, and how will that reflect his first season in charge? Because obviously, Louis van Gaal was sacked for failing to finish in that top four.
But I think that United will do well in these cup competitions. They've got to beat a Southampton team that's just lost Virgil van Dijk in the League Cup, the FA Cup, Blackburn to get to the next round. The momentum's built from that League Cup win in terms of cup competitions, and the Europa League comes back. United may realise that they can't get into the top four. They focus on that. They win the Europa League. That's what I feel the United season is going to go. I feel like there's too many times this season where United's opponents for the top four or for those two spaces have dropped points, and United just haven't done a thing. That's where the draws against Burnley come, the draws against Hull come, and that unfortunately is what's happened to United's season, is when the pressures come, when they've got to turn over games, they've got to just win the game against the side that they should be beating, they don't. And that's kind of the issue for United this season, is they lack a goal scorer that's not Zlatan. They lack goals from around the park, which they're not getting. And unfortunately, that is going to cost them.
It's going to cost Manchester United. What about Arsenal, Chris? Are these sort of results going to cost them? They lost 2-1 at home to Watford. Seemed to delight in going behind and desperately trying to claw back a result. I'm almost bored of talking about Arsenal at this point.
Shut up.
It was a bad night for Arsenal.
I'm not in the fucking mood for this tonight, yeah?
Bad night for Arsenal. Great night for Arsenal Fan TV, though. 1.6 million views post the Watford defeat. More than double
the views
than the win over Burnley just a few weeks previously in the Premier League. Viral Rayaguru on Twitter said, "Why is Arsenal Fan TV so great to watch, Chris?
You're my favourite bad guy in Batman."
I think we've talked about this before, so I'll keep it brief. There was an Optus study that looked at Mourinho, Benitez, Wenger over 10 years, and Wenger had the lowest, let me articulate this properly, passes from opposition before a defensive action was made. And I think something that gives way to is the idea that they're not proactive enough, Arsenal. They're not intense, especially at home. They're more than happy and comfortable to maybe sit back a little bit. Not sit deep, but sit back and allow the team they're facing to have possession. And I think you can't be that idle if you're going to win a title. You have to be willing to take control of a game. And for me, watching them against Watford, they were undone by speed, but also then intense pressure put on them by their opponent, which, again, Watford haven't been a great side this season. But you look at Niang, who comes in with very little prep time, and he does. He looks like one of the best players on the park. And I think part of that is because of how Arsenal performed. It wasn't good enough, and I think you can blame Arsene Wenger all you like. I think there's much deeper-rooted issues there. that realistically may take a little bit longer to fix than just swapping the manager out.
Well, this DT's is the thing.
DT's deep-rooted, mate.
But this is why we get people like DT, people like Troops, orchestrating chants of Wenger out on the channel, and why they do so many views. Everyone loves to see an Arsenal fan meltdown. That's why the channel is so popular with opposition fans after a game. Interestingly enough, though, Lawrence, amid all this acrimony and displeasure from the fans, Mirror journalist John Cross, unsurprisingly, media lovey John Cross, as I believe he's referenced on Arsenal Fan TV, he's got an article on the Mirror today claiming that the Arsenal top brass are baffled by anger of fans who have never had it so good. Club chiefs are apparently privately mystified by the abuse aimed at Arsene Wenger when they are third in the league, above the likes of Mourinho and Guardiola. They're still in Europe, and they have two world-class players in the side.
Yeah, I mean, you can sort of see the point. I mean, I wish that John Cross hadn't made it, but it still sort of stands to reason that they expect better. I don't necessarily agree with the narrative that everyone's painting at the moment. I agree with Chris's analysis, but at the same time, there are elements that I disagree with about Arsenal analysis. Overall, I think there are times where Wenger does ask his side to become more passive and soak up elements of pressure so that they can get the other team into a certain position. I think they were a much more aggressive side before, and so our perception of them is that they should always be aggressive. And the perception is also that if you're not an aggressive team or you're not a predominantly proactive side, then maybe you aren't the more dominant team. And, you know, Wenger's side maybe doesn't always prove that. I think, you know, a Mourinho team, which is more reaction maybe than pro-action in a lot of games, or in some Mourinho iterations, gets around that. And they've proven that they can be champions from being reactive footballers.
I think...
I don't know if I agree.
The problem for me would be I don't necessarily agree with the narrative of, you know, the fans melting down after every single loss, which is, you know, just a massive cliche right now. At the same time, I don't really agree with what John Cross is saying. He's sort of telling the fans, you know, don't have a meltdown. Step back, look at the bigger picture. And we said time and time again on this podcast, the bigger picture is Arsenal underachieving for over 10 years now, almost 15 years. You know, it's the same old, same old. They never seem to learn their lessons. They always have this weak mentality, as Arsene Wenger always puts it, and did again after this latest defeat.
I don't think he said it was a weak man. Did he say it was weak?
I think he talked about the mentality wasn't right.
I'm
paraphrasing slightly.
I mean, weak and not right, though, are two very big things.
But the problem for me would be that this is one of the best Arsenal sides of those last 15 years. They have got those two world-class players in there. I mean, Alexis Sanchez almost single-handedly got him back into that game against Watford. Where are they going to be, though, without someone like him? We're talking about the contract talks that are going on, the problems they've got tying him down to a new contract. I mean, Dave, if they don't have Sanchez next season, this team are not only going to be underachieving, but they could be in real trouble.
But then again, that's the great thing that Arsene Wenger's done at that football club. What, again, is quite frustrating is that it's all, as soon as it goes wrong for Wenger, it opens up to, these 15 years of us not winning a trophy, or these 15 years of us underachieving. We forget that we had like Sir Alex Ferguson in the league there that was absolutely dominating. Then there's a spell now, you know, the last 3 years, potentially you could say that's where Wenger potentially should have stepped up, used the experience and gone. In terms of Arsenal losing their stars, it's happened before. You know, RVP was probably one of the biggest ones that went internally within the league that could happen with Sanchez, you know, with Manchester City looking at it. I think they'll recover. I think they'll be fine. That's classic Arsenal.
Isn't that the point? It's the same thing. Again, they didn't tie their major stars down to a contract, and they're going to lose them again.
There is an issue, but Arsenal will go on. It's an interesting one in terms of, like, for example, I imagine if you'd asked the lads on Arsenal Fan TV before, what do you think of Arsenal's team selection tonight? Playing Olivier Giroud up front, putting another striker on the pitch, having Sanchez in there and so forth. They probably would have gone, yeah, it looks too bad. It doesn't look too bad.
I've got to object there. They definitely didn't. I will give them a lot of stick, but to be fair to, I know DT in particular, in his vlog thing that he does, he actually said the opposite. He said he wasn't happy with team selection.
Again, that's one factor.
No, I know, but the game of football. He's a prominent example. Like, again, I'm all for lampooning when they do stuff stupid. I think you also need to be fair and give balance and say he did actually question the team selection big style. And in fairness, some of the reasons he gave last night made a lot of sense with hindsight.
I also think that DT, these guys have been...
To DT.
These guys have been... Channels. Well, I mean, they have also been elevated to a point. They've been given almost posts of celebrity. They're self-appointed celebrities, these guys.
What does DT stand for?
Don't Design touch.
Technology. but no, seriously, like it's one of those things where I'm all for evaluating what is said on those platforms, but I think you have to be fair in the way that you do that, and you can't just ignore when valid points are made. Otherwise, that just makes you, I would say, obnoxious, and potentially quite, what's the word, patronizing towards the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. I think Arsenal Fan TV has got a reputation, though, of not being the place where fans have a cogent and well-structured argument or opinion on their team and football in general. It just isn't necessarily the place. That's maybe a harsh blanket assessment of the entire channel. And I've got a lot of time for Robbie and a lot of respect for what he's built there. But occasionally it does feel like a bit of a circus.
I think it's the problem is it's got the ability to be both. You know, it's very often you'll find the fool is making a good point as well, or they can make. There's no reason why someone who, you know, is a lot of the time made fun of cannot make a good point every now and again. But I think it's few and far between in that sense.
Look at the industry in general. But we know that not necessarily the most insightful sources produce the most views. So when it starts to go wrong for Arsenal, people aren't clamoring to watch Arsenal Fan TV because they think they're going to get a filtered insight on what went wrong. They do it for the comedy value. And again, it's not a dig at Robbie. I've got a lot of time for the guy, and I admire that he's giving those people a voice. The thing is, though, is that, again, it does feel a little bit like an echo chamber at times when you listen to it.
Well, it also feels a little bit like, I guess the problem is, and, you know, that there's a really good point to be made, that they haven't won anything in a while. Anything of any significance. You know, Dave will tell you, the FA Cup's Mickey Mouse. And that, you know, just because your team's in it doesn't mean you're in any significant competition. And I think... with the same with Arsenal, it's the same as creating a fan channel where people eat caviar and then say, but it's not quite as good as these other three people's caviar. You've sort of got sympathy for them, but they're still eating caviar.
But has the caviar gone rotten or something?
No, mate, because there's
still
nothing
good. It's still good.
Yeah, the caviar's still fine.
I think we've said it before. I think the problem is the lack of even a sense of progress. You know, comparing it to Spurs, which is easy. But you can see Spurs are going in the right direction. We've sacked enough managers to make it seem like there is progress, or at least a series of false dawns with Arsenal, which is the same every season. I think there is that long-standing resentment that's been building and building and comes out every season and results in videos that we see on Arsenal Fan TV and this sort of animosity, really.
Yeah, I mean, there's an irony that a lot of Arsenal fans are just very easily triggered.
Triggered, indeed. Let's talk about
Tony P to the end of the season.
Got to talk about...
then you're missing.
Potentially the biggest game.
Big Sam at the Emirates would be beautiful.
Oh dear, don't. We've got to talk about potentially the biggest game midweek. At least it was billed that way beforehand. Chelsea, of course, taking on Liverpool at Anfield, Lawrence. A 1-1 draw in the end. It was a game that you felt Liverpool had to win, based on where they are in the title race at this current time, but they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at it a number of ways. I think Liverpool had to win to remain in some way relevant and not sort of 10 points behind Chelsea at this point, and they didn't. They obviously drew with them, which kept them at the same distance. But at the same time, I think Liverpool have had probably one of the worst Januaries they've had in a while, performance-wise and result-wise. I don't even really mean that in terms of going out of competitions. I just mean the actual result and sort of the feeling around those results has been very difficult for Liverpool fans to take. I think with the amount of positivity, there was an air of resignation around Liverpool and around Anfield that the season was sort of already over in a sense. I think a lot of people losing sight of the bigger picture that Liverpool haven't and still need to build a foothold in the league, and they still haven't done that. And I think that's, you know, it's difficult to do that at this stage because there are so many strong sides. So even finishing in the top four this season, I think, would be regarded as a success for Liverpool, at least mentally, even if it doesn't feel that way from outside the club. I think, you know, people are still saying we still see the progress despite the sort of lack of tangibility in January. Having said that, they're facing a team who are on a pretty decent roll at the top of the league and are currently on quite a cruising route to the title at this stage. So to draw 1-1 with them is, I think, actually quite an achievement for this Liverpool team that are on terrible run of form.
Especially seeing the gifted penalty in the final stages of the game.
Yeah, I mean, great for Mignolet, but I mean, you know, penalties are just a pure chance. So, you know, yeah, it could have gone. It was better than 50-50 for Chelsea.
Trying to be Pep says on Twitter, with Sadio Mane back, can he help Liverpool break their poor run of form, Lawrence?
I think he brings energy and movement in the right area for Liverpool, which is, as Dave has sort of said on this podcast before, and as we've highlighted time after time, movement between the lines and sort of splitting defenders and splitting players out on the pitch, which then leaves space elsewhere because it sort of drags players out of position, which then other players can take advantage of. I mean, it'll improve Liverpool in a way, but I still think it doesn't fix some of the fundamentals. And I think Sadio Mane is being used in the media as a paper over cracks. Sort of, we don't quite know why Liverpool aren't doing great. And I think people were too quick to heap praise on Liverpool, and now they're too quick to sort of try and flip it.
They've got an interesting run coming up. They've got Hull away, Spurs at home, Leicester away, and then in March, Liverpool at home, Burnley at home, and Manchester City away.
Liverpool playing Liverpool.
What did I say?
Liverpool at home.
Oh, Liverpool playing Burnley at home. Yeah, so an interesting run. Be interested to see how they get on there. As for Chelsea, Dave, I mean, Lawrence says they're cruising to the title. They seem to be on cruise control almost during that game. Did what they needed to do, and the march continues.
Yeah, and they're very, very good defensively. Liverpool did dominate the game with the ball. They were 80-something% possession for the majority of the game, but Chelsea did what Chelsea have done very well this season, the organised and counter-attack, and if they'd taken that penalty, it would have been a big game. And kind of, I liked what Conte did when Liverpool were really starting to push, when Liverpool started to create chances sort of the last 10 minutes of the game. They switched to a 3-5-2. Fabregas came on. It was perfect from Conte. And Golo Kanté had been tackling absolutely everyone, moved to defensive midfield, and there was a midfield three there, and it was beautiful. Saw the game out, and Chelsea got a massive point in the title race, considering what their title rivals have done over the midweek fixtures.
Big point for Chelsea.
And Golo Kanté, I mean, you mentioned there, Dave, nominee for player of the season. During that game, he made 16 tackles, winning 14 of them. That was four times as many than any other player on the pitch.
Adam, it was in fact one less than the entire Liverpool team managed combined.
Wow. Wowee. Stats like that, Dave. I believe he's made more... I believe he's made the most tackles in the past three seasons in the Premier League, despite having only played in two of them.
Yeah. Dave, is that true then, that essentially what you're saying is, Dave, N'Golo Kanté cost Liverpool chances in the same way that that goalkeeper had good performances against United cost Manchester United points?
I think it's a slightly different point, but quite an interesting point. What is the effect of a defensive midfielder on blocking chances? Analysis piece number 75. Obviously, we're waiting for funding to start these analysis pieces, but you know, things like weather affecting fixtures, rainy nights in Stoke, we're going to analyse all this. The amount of noise in a stadium. So make sure you donate kindly, so we can start these pieces. But no,
who are you pitching to, Dave? Is this like a Kickstarter?
Everybody, this is brilliant. Okay, nice. This is send Dave O'Brien money to his house, and he can do these crazy pieces of analysis.
Let's put it through his press box.
In terms of Kanté, I think if you look at his points since Kanté joined the Premier League, he's won more points. He's won more games than any other Premier League side. So if there was a league table, N'Golo Kanté would be winning it at the moment.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Rephrase that, right?
So I'm going to cut your funding. You're saying that N'Golo Kanté has won more points than any other
Premier League side since joining the Premier League.
I like it, mate. I'm not going to argue.
Do you not want to know about the rain in Stoke, whether that's a myth or a fact, Lawrence? Does that not interest you?
Let's do the Mythbuster. I sense the front three series coming up.
The Klopp's Liverpool play better football when the COP are above 35 decibels. Do you know what?
It's impossible to measure those sort of factors, though, isn't it? Especially the crowd noise one.
It's impossible.
Not if you all post £1 through Dave's letterbox and
exactly
fund. We need quite a few of you to turn up.
Not a pound.
It'd be bigger than a pound.
It'll weigh a pound.
Guys, we should also mention midweek in the Premier League. Stoke City, of course, drew 1-1 with Everton. But, of course, the headlines were taken by one man. One man only. Peter Crouch scoring his 100th Premier League goal. And he did the robot. So that was nice, Lawrence.
But what was the weather like?
It's a good point. Did that affect how he scored his 100th goal? I don't know. And we won't know until you fund Dave's project. What's the name of your project, Dave?
Analyze Football.
I love it. It does what it says on the tin. Get your donations in now. You can't do it on the internet. You have to do it physically through Dave's letterbox. First off, you have to just try and find out where he lives. Just guess. Whereabouts, Dave? What's the general vicinity?
I like East London.
Go and pop £1 into £1 into a letterbox in East London. It might be Dave, it might not, but you're giving someone a nice surprise, you know? You're giving them a little something nice.
If I found a pound on the floor or a few pounds posted on the floor, I'd be so freaked out.
Every pound now that I find on the floor, I'm going to post through someone's letterbox. That is from now on. I like the idea of it. People get a nice surprise, like, hang on. You know, did I drop this? Did someone post it? You know, good Samaritan. I don't need the acclaim. I don't need the...
Whose hand is that stuck in my letterbox?
Yeah. I'm stuck. He's trying to steal a quid from the front door.
Just trying to get change.
It could backfire horribly.
Lawrence didn't live with an absolute nutter. I would definitely try and do it through his letterbox next time I was down in London.
Oh, dear. Guys, we don't recommend you that you do it necessarily. We're just saying, you know, that we... I'm definitely doing it.
We're absolutely recommending
that. Oh, sorry, yeah, we are. Lawrence, give me some nice words about Peter Crouch, former Liverpool Spurs striker.
He's a league legend. I mean, you know, been prolific and I think very scary for a lot of defences throughout the league for some time now, not only in the way that he scores goals, but also just in the sense that he poses actually quite a conventional threat that a lot of people seem to overlook on a regular basis because physically he doesn't look the same as everyone else. I think a lot of astute managers have seen this down the years and used him to the best of his ability, which is not only through height, also through a fantastic technical ability, which he brings to a team, and also how he brings other players into play. I like him as a lone striker. And I think that was probably when he was at his most deadly in the league, but he's been very effective sort of alongside maybe someone a little bit smaller, obviously, than Peter Crouch.
But Lawrence, more importantly, though, there was a southern wind of 19 miles an hour. And that, in fact, made the robot easier to execute.
Are people putting money on your letterbox already, Dave? Even though
I'm hearing a southern wind.
Yeah. Can you guess, Dave, what percentage, considering he scored 100 goals, what percentage of Peter Crouch's goals were headed goals in the Premier League?
24%.
48%.
Bloody hell!
Almost half, if you can do your maths. He's actually one of the slowest players as well to reach 100 goals. It took him 419 games compared to the fastest, Alan Shearer, who took 124 games. So fair play to him. He's been around a long time, a fantastic player, fantastic guy. So congratulations to Peter Crouch, now one of the 100 club in the Premier League. Great stuff. Another Premier League legend we should probably discuss is Frank Lampard, Chris. Retired today from professional football at the age of 38, I believe. A lot of talk comparing him to Gerrard, comparing him to Scholes today. And we've had the question come in on Twitter asking us, can we rank Lampard among the Premier League greatest? I personally think he's the best midfielder to play in the league ever. Now, it's an interesting one But I think what's even more interesting about Frank Lampard is the perception that perhaps he's underrated, Chris. We always compare him to Gerrard. We always compare him to Scholes. And he invariably seems to come off worse compared to those two in most people's comparison, despite his record, despite the trophies that he's won over the course of his career.
He's better than Scotty Cannon. That much is for sure.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
I think the thing is, I feel like they're very different midfielders, Lampard, Gerrard and Scholes. They had very different roles as players. And I think if you're going to just compare it off what they won, you would probably say Scholes is the best. You know, if you look at pure goals, it's possible to look past Lampard. Gerrard arguably played with the more inferior group of players around him compared to the other two. So it's much of a muchness in that sense. I think it's more pertinent and more relevant, at least, to focus on the career that he had as a midfielder. And I think what you can say is during a period in which Chelsea went through massive change and really overhauled their squad in a dramatic way, he remained constant. And, you know, they were so quick to get rid of players that didn't perform, whether it was Scott Parker, Mutu, Crespo, they all kind of came, and if it didn't sink straight away, and it didn't stay. And he was the exception to that. He was signed from West Ham again. You know, maybe wasn't as highly rated in terms of expectation to be a club legend when he arrived, if not just a promising English midfielder with potential. But I think he did a fantastic job at Chelsea. He really did elevate them. And despite not having maybe the most successful history himself, because he was so young and had come from West Ham, he just seemed to have that champions mentality. And I've been fortunate enough to be closer to him when he was in New York and be around him and talk to teammates on and off the record. And you will struggle to find a bad word said about him, not just Frank Lampard, the player, and his quality on the ball and finding spaces to score goals, but off the field as well, in terms of being able to give advice and wanting to help those around him, which, let's be honest, it's not always the case with veteran players. Often they want to make sure that their spot's taken care of. They really don't care about those around them, but that's not the case with Lampard. He seems like he was not only a fantastic player, but a fantastic teammate too.
Do you think, Lawrence, I mean, stop me if I'm talking absolute rubbish, but I think with the head, you can make a very good case as to why Lampard is one of the greatest Premier League midfielders of all time, above Gerrard and Scholes. Potentially, you know, Chelsea's all-time goal scorer. He's one of the top scorers in the Premier League. I think he's fourth in the all-time list, despite being a midfielder. I think he scored 20-plus goals for 10 consecutive seasons, which, again, considering his position, is very impressive. Do you think maybe, though, compared to those players that he is always compared with, there's a lack of connection with the heart? Do you know what I mean? Liverpool fans obviously love Gerrard. He's a hero and a legend in Liverpool, having come from that area. Paul Scholes, somebody played for Manchester United his entire career. Obviously, there's that connection there with the supporters. Do you think maybe there's something lacking in terms of Frank Lampard and his legacy in that respect?
Not really. I mean, I think he definitely comes, like Kristen says, I think he comes across as a very genuine part of a football team. And I think a few people have questioned a more personal side to his life, but I don't know how much business that is of anyone's. I actually think he does have a fairly good connection with the Chelsea fans. You know, there's been plenty of great clips posted of him today on social media where he, some of the players run to celebrate. I think they're in the Champions League final, or they're in, might be the Champions League final, they're in a final and watching a penalty shootout, and the goal goes in, and instead of running off with the players, Frank Lampard turns around to the fans. So I think maybe he's not connected with the wider set of fans, but I think Chelsea fans and a lot of other people would disagree.
I think maybe that, I know, obviously know he's a Chelsea legend, but I was sort of talking in a more general sense, even though Gerrard has obviously got his detractors. I think logically you can make a case for Lampard, but I'm not sure if he had that impact almost on an intangible level with football fans. Just a perception. Just
what do you want him to do, mate?
I don't want to do anything. I'm not necessarily saying I agree with that, because for me,
goals.
For me, you know, if you're going to rank him, I'd go Gerrard, Lampard, Scholes. Sorry, Dave. But I just, there just seems to be a general perception.
Good one, mate.
And yet,
it
was, I think it was Arrigo Sacchi that said that Gerrard was a very good kind of footballer, but he didn't understand the game in the same way that Scholes and maybe Lampard did.
Maybe put Lampard top. Dave, what do you reckon of that?
Absolutely not. Come on, Adam.
It's Paul Scholes top, is it?
I would be, I must admit, I'd be tempted to put Gerrard at the, if I had to, put him at the back end, because the way you look, and I only, and this is, it kind of leads off the Arrigo Sacchi point that as they got older, I think you saw Scholes and Lampard better than Gerrard did. Now that could be because his game was about being this all energy action midfielder, but I do think that Lampard and Scholes became cannier and smarter as they got older, whereas Gerrard just didn't seem to have that.
Didn't evolve.
I think that's a very good point. A very good point.
I mean, to put a defence forward for Gerrard, then in that sense, I think Gerrard is clearly the most athletic of those three midfielders, and clearly the most versatile of those three midfielders. And you know, I mean, Sacchi can say what he wants. I think there are a number of other midfielders in the world who sort of admire Gerrard for what he did and during that time. You know, not least sort of Barcelona players. Who were at their peak at that time. AC Milan players are at their peak at that time. And I think a lot of people, well, it's difficult to admire him sticking around at a club because really it doesn't look like he ever wanted to stick around at the club. You'd also say they have to admire the fact that he did sort of put his body completely on the line because he, in many ways, he felt like he had to rush about the pitch to make up for other players' deficiencies. But I also think part of that, you'd say maybe Gerrard didn't trust the people around him enough. And I think some of that got to him in the end. That's maybe part of the problem with Gerrard himself as a captain, is that he didn't let other people, or didn't give other people the opportunity to go out there and be the players that they wanted to be, because very often it was the Steven Gerrard show. It wasn't anyone else. And there are times where I've got to admit, I sort of wonder about the almost Dimitri Payet-esque effect of Steven Gerrard on Liverpool, and whether they would have been a more free club.
It is interesting to consider that context, though, in terms of Lampard played in some of the greatest Premier League sides of all time, as did Paul Scholes.
Yeah.
Steven Gerrard potentially didn't.
No, he didn't. I mean, he played in arguably one of, if not Liverpool's greatest side of the last 20 years, which, you know, ironically, I think won nothing. Maybe an FA Cup, but they didn't win anything. They came second in the league.
Yeah, but to point, yeah. But you can point out his personal failings, but I think you should take into consideration that obviously football's a team game and there's other factors that affect a player's legacy like that.
Yeah, like slipping over, right?
On that note, guys, right, it's obviously a very interesting conversation. We do want to hear your thoughts. Do tweet us at the front three. Obviously, it's all subjective, you know, so do let us know what you think.
On but we can rank them objectively.
But we will rank them objectively, you know, and we have. Let's move on to the questions, guys. It's why we are here. You've been getting them in on Twitter at the front three. Let's get to it.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
First up, my favourite question this week has to be from the main man, Carlos Zaldivar. Fantastic question. If you could go back in time and watch any football match live, which game would it be and why? For me, it would be the 04-05 Clásico, the Ronaldinho hat-trick at the Bernabeu, to see Ronaldinho's magic that even made Madridistas applaud him. He was slightly early in my life, so I never got to truly watch him live in his prime. heart emoji, football emoji, blue heart emoji? Great question, Carlos. Great answer to your own question as well. What do we think, guys? If we could hop in our DeLorean, power it up to 88 miles an hour, travel back in time and watch a football game, what would be our choice? The one that immediately springs to mind for me, potentially, would be to go and see Pelé was playing for Santos. Famously scored potentially the greatest goal ever. People say, eyewitnesses say, this was back in the late 50s. Apparently, you know, one of the greatest goals of all time. But of course, there was no video. There was no one recording the game at the time. It's one of those goals that was famously recreated a few years ago by a special effects artist, and people sort of putting that together. It was like a recreation of the goal. But to actually go back in time and see that goal in person, you know, the greatest goal ever scored, apparently, I think that would be an interesting choice. Santos v Juventus, apparently. So yeah, I think I'd go and check that one out. Chris, what do you say?
I would, I'm trying to think. I would go and see Newcastle 5, Man United 0.
Wow, he's gone for it. He has gone for it.
Balls to the wall, Chris.
Do you not think one of those ones where, you know, maybe there wasn't footage of the game, or maybe way back when, not something you could, or you want to soak up the atmosphere, you want to be there, Chris, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I watched it on television, but I would like, because it was, I mean, it was chucking it down with rain too, it was nice. So, something like that, something where it means something to me, I think, is, actually, no, I take it back. This is so...
Change everything.
On, I want to see Frank Lampard's penalty against Liverpool in the Champions League.
Why do you want to see that?
Why?
Because that was the week he lost his mum, and it was one of the most emotional things I've ever watched on television, and I can imagine it was electric that night. Because I remember, it's an image that's burned into my brain of him scoring the penalty, running to the corner, and you can just see him break down at what he's been through, and just that, I think it was so many emotions in one. That to me is, yeah, that's football. That
very good answer.
You just have to stand with all the Chelsea fans.
Very good answer, Lawrence. I assume you're not going to pick the same moment.
Yeah, I mean, it probably was a great moment. I'd probably go, to be honest, Istanbul probably wasn't one of them for me. It was a great night, and I imagine it was fantastic to witness live. Maybe you want to go back to, I'd love to go back to the 60s, maybe go back to somewhere like Anfield, or back to somewhere like Wembley, where, you know, there was a very different kind of crowd, and see what the atmosphere was like then. Maybe witness Liverpool's promotion from the second division in the 60s under Bill Shankly. That would be an emotional moment for Liverpool.
I like that. You saw killing two birds with one stone.
You sort of know the turning point as well. That's kind of the point. I wonder what it felt like back then, because obviously you don't know, you know, obviously you don't know what happens in the next 30 years. You don't know what incredible paving slabs are being laid down in Liverpool, though it probably is crazy paving if it's in Liverpool.
Well said. Dave, what is your choice?
It's a simple one. The 1968 European Cup final at Wembley. Sir Matt Busby, building United, the Busby Babes, you know, all that shebang. You see Eusebio as well, one of the greatest forwards ever. I think that's got to be that one. It's quite an easy one for me.
I like it. I think it's a great question. I think they'll... Great answers there, guys. Let us know what you would travel back in time, which game you'd want to go and see at the Front Three on Twitter. Carlos, fantastic question. Very interesting. Next question is from AT Tripat 171. Thoughts on the Suarez and Messi goals against Atleti yesterday? They were very decent.
Adam, you watched one. You watched Messi's goal back.
Just I did watch Suarez's goal.
Oh, right, okay.
Because of this very question, I hadn't actually seen the game. But, I mean, yeah, they're really good goals. I don't have much analysis.
Gary would have been proud.
That is great analysis. Gary would be proud of those ones. The next question is from King Mick. How can United fix their conversion rate in front of goal? That whole game was excruciating.
training ground. Paul Pogba, David De Gea. I reckon maybe 2 hours after every training session this week, Paul Pogba has to work on his 1v1 finishing. And I think United would... There's been a few games this season where Pogba's gone clean through one-on-one and bottled it. So that's what I do, to try and fix it in the short term. In the long term, of course, it's signing Antoine Griezmann from Atletico Madrid. Two simple solutions there. Not going to cost you much.
Yeah, only the odd 85 million. I've actually got a question for you, Dave. I saw a stat on the official Premier League Twitter account yesterday. It said that Zlatan Ibrahimovic has missed the most big chances in the Premier League this season. Could you explain that as a quantifiable statistic to me? What does that mean, big chances? Or are you as bewildered as I am?
Opta assign a chance created to an event, it either gets the value key pass, which is a pass that leads to a shot on goal, or a assist, which is a pass that leads to a goal. A big chance is one of the qualifiers attached to one of those events. So a big chance is quantified where I think it's something like the striker or the forward, whoever's got the ball, has a big chance to score the goal deemed by the Opta analyst. So I think what it obviously means is that Zlatan has been missing a few chances. But if you think about the games the amount of times Paul Pogba, more specifically, has slid Zlatan through and he's choked, it is quite a lot this season. But Zlatan isn't the only one to blame. I think United have been massively misfiring, especially in midfield. I think the stats I looked at today, which tweeted out, were quite interesting, where only Sunderland and Southampton had scored fewer shots on target than Manchester United. So United have got the third worst conversion rate of shots on target. That's quite an interesting one, because shots on target do directly... There is a correlation with shots on target to wins. That's what bettors, a lot of professional gamblers, use to predict results, is the amount of shots on target they can predict the team's going to get. So if United are missing shots on target, for me, it kind of feels like a little bit poor finishing. Then you look at the plot of where United's shots have gone in a goal, you can kind of see that it's too central. They need to be finding the corners more to improve that chance conversion. And that's just something that either it's a thing they're never going to improve with some of these players, like Juan Mata yesterday has to score that goal with the experience and with the amount of time that he's played football and so forth, he has to score that goal. 3 yards out, he's got to put that in the back of the net. So I think it's a thing with United that they need to work on it. And they've obviously not been working on it hard enough yet. So, players like Paul Pogba need to do some extra training.
That's why they call you the stat man, mate. 85 shots at home versus the three promoted sides this season. Manchester United have scored just two goals.
Clinical.
Very clinical. Chris, this one is definitely for you. Oskari Kajava. Kajava, what do you think about Atlanta United?
They're doing a really good job of building a team. They've got their third DP in Josef Martinez of Torino. He's Venezuelan. And I think I'm right in saying that means all three of their DPs are under 23. They've added some more experienced guys. Chris McCann's in there. But overall, it's quite a young-looking team. Andrew Carlton, who's quite a highly thought-of American prospect, is in there. And Tata Martino is the coach. So the excitement levels are quite high for Atlanta United in the debut season. You can never really gauge how an expansion side is going to do, because there's a lot of intangibles to consider. How does the team gel? Is there a point where they burn out in the first season? But you look at that squad that they've got now, and you have to think there's going to be weekends where they are nigh unplayable, because you've got Kenwyn Jones in there, you've got Miguel Almiron, Martinez that we touched on there as well. So it's a well-built squad, and honestly, I've had the privilege of having a chat with Carlos Bocanegra, who's the sporting director, and the plans seem very well laid out, which is always a great sign. So yeah, good luck to them.
Good luck to them. James Turner says, are words like mentality and desire just easy but meaningless ways of criticizing teams and players, or are they valid criticism, Lawrence McKenna?
I think mentality to other things. Desire. I mean, mentality certainly is illusion to a wider thing. I think very often it's, and I think someone else we've had on the podcast, Nick Morales, sort of breaks this down in quite a few of his tweets when he sort of says, you know, pundits use certain words as maybe synonyms for wider concepts. And I think when I say the word mentality, you know what I'm getting at within a football team. And it's sort of shorthand for me having to explain a very detailed or nuanced version of something, which I'm sort of using it as shorthand because I know I'm assuming that you're all up to date with what mentality means within a squad and that you're kind of on at least nodding terms with what Man City's mentality is. I think sometimes it can be used in a lazy way because some people sort of go, well, they don't have the right mentality. Or, you know, they've got the wrong mentality. I think when it's used in a binary sentence, then it's probably wrong. But you can definitely use it as part of your analysis. And I think a lot of, I mean, even Arsene Wenger sort of alludes to that. Although you would argue that even he can sort of use that to distract the press. And it makes it very easy to write headlines. So no, I don't think it's wrong. I just think some people use it in the wrong way. I don't think everyone does.
Yeah. Interesting one.
I mean, Jonathan Wilson uses it all the time. So I'm going to say that's a quantified use of the word mentality.
Next question is from Trill RV, Mr. Herv on Twitter. Thank you for your question.
Mr. Herv.
Why does the English media discredit young players? If Jesus is good enough, Aguero should be benched. The future is now, says Trill. Well said.
Three of the title tracks from ASAP Rocky's new album.
Now, at first I thought he was referring to the routine bashing of Raheem Sterling in the English press, but he's actually talking about Jesus. I haven't seen anything to discredit him. All I've seen is lauding, to be honest.
Do you think he's sort of saying that because the focus is not on him, that that it's on Aguero for not being in the team? That for some reason that is
maybe. But everyone's just been like, wow, this kid is decent. This guy's good. Oh, Aguero's been benched. Oh, okay, interesting. You know, it's not discrediting him. Trill, I mean, please tweet us with some clarification here because I'm struggling. I'm overlooking something, I think.
Yeah, I've read a lot of things recently, and especially read and had a lot of meetings with people who've been talking about how on the continent people they believe the analysis on TV is actually better and the analysis in the papers is better than in the UK. Anyone else out there on the podcast sort of think that the English analysis is not very good tactically?
Depends who it is, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, this is what I was sort of thinking, is there's a thriving Twitter scene where it's sort of very very rampant, but maybe it's less so in the mainstream print media.
Gonzalo Golazzo, great name, wants to know who you got in Super Bowl LI.
I've got Lady Gaga.
Yeah? Who is doing the halftime show? Is Lady Gaga?
Well, yeah.
That makes sense. Actually, you're plucking names out. Wow,
you're quick on the uptake.
I was like, obviously Lawrence doesn't know who is performing at halftime in the Super Bowl. He does. Sure. Fair play. It's the New England Patriots versus the Atlanta Falcons. I'm putting my money and heart behind the Atlanta Falcons because I heard the word Atlanta a few minutes ago. I've based it on that. So go Falcons.
Go Falcons!
Anyone got the Patriots? Anyone going for that?
Nah.
It's all about Atlanta, mate. All about them.
I was into NFL, I liked Atlanta Falcons. They had Michael Vick as their quarterback, and he was some fella that used to, instead of throwing it, he'd just run it and beat like 10 players, and he was sick and stuff. And then he got done for dogfighting, so I kind of thought, Is NFL really for me?
I like how you based it on that. I think the NFL is actually a very good sport to watch. Great spectator sport. I enjoy watching it. But over here,
you
unfortunately,
have to say that. Spencer sponsored by them.
No, I genuinely, I've actually got a bunch of the Madden football games, That's how much
Adam, can you teach us anything about? I mean,
I've got the most basic knowledge.
Talk to us about the shotgun, mate.
Like I just said, I have the most basic knowledge imaginable. I couldn't even tell you what a shotgun is.
Are you good in the pocket?
In many ways. The thing is, though, the Super Bowl, I believe, over here will start like midnight or something.
And on
Sunday, it's a school night, you know. Can I really stay up for 4 hours and watch the Super Bowl? Yeah, okay, cool. We will 100%. Stay up. Are we going to stay up and watch the Super Bowl? Stream Super Bowl from
one guy with
extremely basic knowledge and a couple with less than
it's
that.
A try. They've scored a goal.
We could try and tactically analyze a game we have no real tactical concept of.
Yeah. I've watched a bit in my time, to be fair, but I don't think I'm an expert.
Do you think we can work it out in one night based on the Super Bowl final?
Yeah,
and that should be our first ever live stream.
Can it really be? I'm sensing a live stream, mate. I'm sensing views. You title a live stream Super Bowl live stream, mate. Watch along.
Lads, I'll give you American accent.
Let the views roll in, lads.
Have you got it, Adam? American accent? Because we need to pretend to be American to get more views.
Hey guys, welcome to the Super Bowl live stream. Patriots versus the Falcons. It's gonna be huge.
Lawrence, go.
Certainly different, I'll give you that.
Lawrence, American accent.
I'm not partaking in that.
Moving swiftly on. Ayush at Silver KDB _MCFC. He is a City fan, in case you couldn't tell. Should Pep Guardiola look to replace Claudio Bravo in the summer, or does he deserve another chance? If not, which goalkeeper should we go for? Chris, I want to hear your thoughts on this one.
Which keeper should they go for?
Brave Joe Hart, maybe?
Nah. I think just because Bravo isn't doing well doesn't mean that Joe Hart is the solution. I think that's a little bit black and white thinking. The thing is that's concerned me about Bravo, I read a really good piece by David Priest in which he deconstructed Bravo's goalkeeping approach.
He's a very
good
piece.
He's a really talented pundit, is David. I think he should have a lot more opportunities than he has at the minute. But one of the things he talked about was that Bravo keeps his hands quite close to his body. And he believes that's because in futsal, that's how you kind of talk to goalkeep. Changing little things like that could make a huge amount of difference, but they could also be difficult for a goalkeeper as experienced as Bravo, who is, I imagine, to a degree set in his ways. In terms of which goalkeeper you then go and buy, I have to confess, there's not really a number of goalkeepers that have stood out to me this year that aren't at top clubs already. And that's what you're looking to try and do. You're maybe wanting to buy a young prospect like Thibaut Courtois with Chelsea many years ago, or someone that's already established and looking to move on like they did with Bravo. And I'm struggling to see. I can't imagine Lloris would move internally like that, if not for a huge, vast amount of money. Maybe keep an eye on Jordan Pickford if Sunderland go down. But yeah, honestly, it's not something that's jumping out to me in terms of a ready solution. So if our listeners have any, I'm always eager to hear it, because we have such a not only knowledgeable but wide varying listener base who watch so much football. So yeah, by all means, chuck some names in and let's see what we can come up with.
I like it. Crowdsourcing the answer to the question. It's the future. Shane O'Donnell 95 says, with Chelsea on course to win the league with a 3-4-3 and Leicester having success last year with a 4-4-2, which formation, Dave, is going to win the league next year?
Well, Adam, I think it might move back to the 4-2-3-1 system with Antoine Griezmann at Manchester United. He's going to score lots of goals, so I feel that system's going to really make him move back into modern football. With the 4-3-3 being popular in the Champions League, the 4-2-3-1 will come back and will evolve and will destroy some teams.
What's going on?
Wow, who was that? Who was that, is the question. It certainly wasn't Dave. Next question.
Good to have you on the show, Kartik.
Cheers, mate. Osbert Moore, a Ferrero Rocher fan. Osbert Moore, how much game time do you see Welbeck getting for Arsenal now he is fit, but admittedly competing with the likes of Alexis, Giroud and Perez? What do you make of this, Lawrence? Because Welbeck coming back, I mean, we spoke about midweek, fantastic finishing against Southampton in the Cup. Alexis, he's starting. I mean, he is the heartbeat of this team. Giroud, again, he's got his detractors, especially after that game against Watford. And Perez, despite some good performances and some good flourishes, I mean, he absolutely hammered the bar against Watford, very close to drawing them level in that game. Doesn't seem to be favoured necessarily by Arsene Wenger. I think Welbeck in the second half of the season, I think he could see some game time. Maybe he could make the difference for Arsenal, Lawrence.
I think you've answered your own question. I think he, you know, in the second half of the season, you need some squad depth. You need to be able to rotate players in and out. Players are going to be getting tired at that point in the season. Welbeck is relatively fresh compared to the rest of the squad coming off the back of an injury. And I think he'll be a very important part of the squad come the end of the season, because I think he brings great combination play with other players. He's a very considerate forward in that sense. Works very well in a lot of intricate moves, which is another thing that Arsenal have maybe been lacking, and that's why they've gone for more direct play more recently. And I think, he will come in handy, even if he's not going to finish off those moves. I think he's going to be an important part of them, because I think Welbeck was bought by Arsene Wenger for a reason. I think it's his intricate interplay, which he offers not only on the edge of the box, but maybe also a little bit further out wide. I think he does work as a forward that maybe some other strikers in the team don't, like Giroud. And I think that's the reason Wenger bought Perez, for a very similar reason.
This is a tasty question from the class of 92. Best Champions League final in your lifetime? Dave, I guess.
One answer only.
Yeah, I feel like Lawrence and Dave, they might have different answers, but I feel like I know what the answers are going to be. Lawrence, go with
you
first.
One's an actual achievement.
Yeah, yeah.
And one is just a bit crap.
Dave, what's your answer?
Well, Adam, my five favorite final in recent Champions League history is going to be Barcelona versus Juventus. What a game of soccer that was.
Kill me.
I mean, I was going to suggest that myself. I'm surprised that you went for that one, but fair play.
Well, Adam.
It went. Lawrence, what are you saying? Just for those who may not know.
In our lifetime, I think you probably, in terms of drama, you're probably going to go for Istanbul.
I was actually a big fan of the 2011 final as well, you know, when Barcelona beat Manchester United. The kind of the peak Barcelona in a way.
Ah, bro, peak was in 2013-14.
Interesting, very interesting. Chris, greatest Champions League final of your lifetime?
Probably Istanbul, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see past that in a way. There's been some great ones. There has been some great ones. Here is another question from Peepo, please, at Violet Citizen. First, it's a two-part question, and they're not really related. Maybe they are. First up, on current form, which three teams do you see going down? I think for me it's Sunderland, it's going to be Hull, and... Leicester are in the conversation now, but I think that's really tough because Swansea have started to find their rhythm a little bit. Two wins now, back-to-back wins. I'm going to go for Hull, Sunderland and Swansea. Hull, Sunderland, Swansea. Chris?
I'm going to go with the same as you.
Lawrence, you disagree and agreeing?
I
mean, Palace is there, 2 points above Palace, who are currently 18th. It are Leicester and Swansea? They're on equal points at the moment, Leicester and Swansea.
Could
the champions go down? I mean, surely not.
Be funny, wouldn't it?
I don't know. I don't know if it'd be funny. I'd feel kind of sad for Leicester.
Well, you'd also feel very happy for Leicester.
They can win another league next season, eh?
I'd rather Swansea didn't go down.
No, I don't want them to go down, but, you know, difficult, very difficult.
I think the problem is it really takes the wheels off Palace, but then there's so many teams you don't want to go down there. You know what? I think Big Sam will probably save them, and it probably will be Swansea or Leicester that end up going down. I think the Leicester side have completely lost their team mentality, Adam.
They have indeed. Among other things, 18. Definitely their mentality. Wow, you think Leicester are going down? You've made the call, Dave.
Leicester, Hull City, and Sunderland Red and White Sox.
Really, Leicester going down, Dave?
I think so, Adam.
I can't tell.
He's persisting with this till the end of the podcast.
Just to say it.
Who is this? It's definitely not Dave, because that is 100% authentic American accent. There's no putting that on. Are you Dave's American?
Yes, Statman Steve. Right out of Detroit, America.
Detroit with that accent, wow.
Can't tell if he's having a breakdown or a stroke at this point.
Both at the same time, I think. Steve, thank you for subbing in for Dave. Pleasure to have you. There's a question for you here, Steve, seeing as you're a stat man yourself. Is Gylfi Sigurdsson's free kick conversion rate better than Messi's?
Well, Adam, in the last three really seasons of soccer, Gylfi Sigurdsson has converted 14% of his free kicks compared to Messi, which is around 8% of his free kicks. So, in fact, Adam, Gylfi Sigurdsson won, Lionel Messi nil.
Wow. If you were truly American, you might have said zero there, Steve. The mask is slipping.
No, Adam, all of us.
I'm afraid to say. Just in time for a really good question, which we probably need Dave in the room for and not Steve. The Shining Ocean says, what are your thoughts on Hakan Calhanoglu's four-month ban? This could seriously damage Leverkusen's already not particularly great season. Now, Dave, for context, can you please explain why he has received this four-month ban?
So, Calhanoglu was at Karlsruhe as a youth player. And then, in fact, I think he'd signed a contract with Transport. And then he moved to Hamburg. Didn't go to Turkey, went to Germany, north of Germany, and then moved to Leverkusen after that move. So the issue is that his contract in Turkey was actually valid, and it's taken 3 years nearly to get this through the courts. I think it's at the CAAS, and they finally ruled that it was illegal. So he's been banned till the end of the season. What I think it means for Leverkusen is they will potentially have to replace him. He's been pretty decent from November onwards. He's been, you know, part of this Leverkusen side, resurgent Leverkusen. So it's going to be a bit of a problem for them to replace him in the side. Obviously, Julian Brandt has been fantastic this season and has taken a lot of the attacking impetus. But yeah, someone like Volen potentially could come in, or they could change their system up and just go with a single striker or play Kiesling. So it's a lot of questions for the manager, but it could be an interesting time for them.
Is it harsh on both the player and the club, Chris? We had Rudi Völler, the Leverkusen sports director, coming out earlier this week saying the club cannot comprehend the decision. Feels like the club is being punished when they had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, actually. I think the fact it's taken, 6 years to reach this point is quite concerning as well. I can imagine that Trabzonspor are still mightily annoyed, and they probably don't see it as an unjust punishment, the fact he's going to miss 4 months. Again, I think he's got €100,000 fine in there as well, so you could maybe ramp the fine up a bit more, but then, you know, you would argue that if Leverkusen signed him, they must have known that this was an ongoing case. I can't imagine it was hidden in the shadows, so I guess it was a risk that they thought was worth taking when they signed him. It's a very messy situation from start to finish, to be frank.
Final question this week, to bring an end to the Thursday Q&A podcast, is from Alex Sanchez with a really tough one, a really interesting one, at SNZAlex13. Thank you for your question. Pie or cake? It's a tough
cake.
Tough decision for some, not Lawrence McKenna, who's gone straight for cake. What type of cake, Lawrence? What's your favourite cake?
It's a classic chocolate cake, Adam. Yeah.
Classic chocolate cake?
Classic chocolate cake with a layer of jam in the middle.
What
raspberry jam.
What the hell are you talking about?
I'm talking about chocolate cake
with jam in the middle?
Yeah. Really hipster, isn't it?
Mental, mate.
Not hipster, mate. I've been having it since I was a kid.
Can you buy that in shops? Because I've never had that before and I don't want it either.
Is something wrong with you guys? Of course you can buy that in shops.
Jam in a chocolate cake. Jam. Are you talking about like a perverted Victoria sponge or something? What's going on here?
There's nothing perverted about it, Adam. And the way your brain's turning into a perverted thing is.
The thing is, I've never had a chocolate cake with jam in the middle myself. I had a Victoria sponge cake, you know, great cake. Black Forest Gatto cake, you know, is that what you're sort of talking about, Lawrence? That's a good cake. Pies, though. I'm not a big fan of pies. Name a great pie. Can't. Do you know what I mean?
Apple pie.
Actually, to be fair, apple pie is pretty good. Is it great, though? Do you know what I mean? It's good. Is it great?
Yeah, it's great.
Fair enough.
Not as good as crumble, though.
That's the thing. And that's not a pie. Crumble is an absolute delight in the mouth. Pie.
That's not a pie.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. A pie, you can't even attribute the deliciousness of an apple crumble to a pie. What's a great pie? Apple crumble's better than apple pie. Where's the great dessert pies out there? They don't exist. Do you know what I'm saying? Pumpkin pie, Adam, the Americans will say. Steve might say. He's wrong. Do you know what I'm saying?
Because this could be a savory versus sweet debate. You know, you can get a good pie.
No.
You know, a chicken pie, meat and potato pie, any type of pie that has got some sort of deliciousness in versus a cake that's sweet. You know, this is a bigger question, Adam. This isn't that we can't solve this in 10 minutes.
I think he's strictly talking dessert.
Is it
dessert though? Function of these particular vessels of food.
That is right. Gone.
We need Chris to come down one side or the other. That's what I'm waiting for.
Fruit cake, pie. Chocolate cake.
Banoffee. Chocolate. Do you have jam in the middle, Chris?
No, I don't know where that's come from.
Weird, isn't it? If you've had jam in a chocolate cake, do let us know on Twitter at the Front Free. I'd be surprised if one person says they have. I think that's just you, Lawrence. You got some weird cakes, mate. Weird cakes. Banoffee pie is a great pie, actually, to be fair. That's a pretty good pie. Let us know where you come down on this timeless debate, pie or cake, on Twitter at the Front Three. For now, though, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been a pleasure to have you listening to us. It's been a pleasure to be here alongside you guys. Dave, where can the good people find you before Monday when we'll be back with the weekend review?
YouTube Friday, the Front Three. Well, I think we might be able to find me there.
Really? That is an intriguing little tease. And of course, they can see you on Saturday live. Isn't that correct?
Live, yeah. Make sure you tune in to Slash Football. It's going to be awesome.
You do not want to miss it, believe me. Chris, where can the good people find you before Monday?
At KHENEAGE.
And Lawrence McKenna, when you're not eating chocolate jam cake, where can you be?
I've not had it in ages, mate. At Loscast, LOZCAST.
What about the chocolate cake?
I would like to know where to find that because it's interesting.
I'll bake it for you.
Oh, please do. That would actually be a delight.
That sounds ominous.
Guys, you can find me on Twitter at Adam Bolter. Do go check out the Front Three on YouTube as well. We're going to be back on Monday with a little.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cheeky scout report, you know, one of them. So tune in. Until Monday, have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the football and we'll see you soon.